Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And you are listening to Fiber Talk, that twice weekly podcast that we do for people who play with needles. And this week's guest, she's Twisted, she's a stitcher, and we learned over Christmas that she's really terrible about receiving gifts. Yes, Vonna Pfeiffer back with us. Hi, Vonna.
Hi, Gary. Hi, Christine.
Hello.
I got such a laugh out of that.
I do stink at that, though. I really do.
Mr. Vonna, you're really good at giving gifts, but you're terrible at receiving.
he always says that. I get lots of things. I mean, all the time, beautiful, wonderful things. And every time I get something, then I start saying, oh, I've got, what am I going to do for them? I can't, you know, what am I going to do? My husband's always like, just enjoy it. They didn't send it to you because they want something in return. I really do stink at that. I really do. I'm not graceful at all at that.
Of your 25 days, that was the funniest one right there. Because I can see him just giving you that look like, spare me, lady. Really? Just say thank you. Just say thank you and move on.
He just does not. He's like a, you know, he's even. So very even. And I'm a roller coaster. And thank God for him because he straightens me out. And I need straightened out on like a daily basis. So.
That was a funny one. That 25 days, I mean, it's neat that you do it, but man, it seems like a lot of work to come up with something every day.
It is hard. This year I struggled and I kind of fell apart at the end. And it was just simply because, you know, with Katie being in college, she comes home, you know, right in the middle of all that. And, when she's home, I want to spend every free moment I have with her.
Sure.
And it just kind of all fell apart. And it takes I don't think people, if you don't do blogging, you don't understand how long it takes. And just to take the pictures and upload and, you know, edit the pictures and make them look pretty. And then, you know, the writing is cathartic for me. I like to write. And
that's the easy part.
Yeah, that's the easy part. And to set it up, and then you have to, after I write it, then I'll read it 3 or 4 times before I publish it just to make sure, you know, that it's, you know, there's not any kind of glaring mistakes. And doing it every day takes it's a huge amount of time. So I still will do it next year. I might do it maybe abbreviated, maybe not every day, maybe do it like every other day or something. I don't know how I'm gonna, maybe it'll just be the 12 days of Christmas. I don't know. It'll have to be something, because this year I really struggled. I was racking my brain because I feel like, what was I kind of fell apart. Like I said, I just didn't know if what I was sharing was anything of value, to be honest with you.
Well, it's good because what you do is from the heart, so that's always good. But, you know, that's why most blogs fall apart after 6 months or 8 months, because it's hard.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I have a huge, you know, there's a lot of people that follow me and read my blog and don't really do anything, you know, like they don't watch videos or they, you know, that's a huge, I have a huge following on my blog, and I have, you know, I think it's like my 12th or 13th year of blogging. And so I have a lot of, you know, relationships that I've made with people through the years. And so I do it just for the, you know, for them, because, you know, they're so nice to me and I get such lovely, you know, letters from people. So I continue it just for that. And then I'll be honest, it's nice to look back and see, you know, how I've evolved and how my family has evolved through the years, and how my stitching has evolved. And so it's nice for that, you know, kind of a historical look at the Twisted Stitcher, I guess. So.
Yeah. There's no doubt about that. It's kind of a life log. Makes there. Sense. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it does take work. It's, you know, it's all these things, doing these podcasts, doing your videos, You watch one of your videos and I'm just sitting there watching you and I'm going, oh, the work that's behind this thing.
Yeah.
The time,
and
you know.
Mine aren't even as polished as some of the people I feel like that do the videos, but mine is like what you say. I think that's what my appeal is to a broad range of people, is that I'm genuine. I think that I do everything with my heart. My heart's always kind of on my sleeve. And I think that that appeals to people. And mm-hmm. that's the way my videos are. I'm just, you know, I hear number one comment is I just feel like I'm sitting and talking to my friend. And that makes me happy, because that's who I am in my videos, who I am in my blog, is who I am in everyday life. So I'm glad that I'm genuine enough that people can see that for themselves. So.
Oh yeah. It comes through. Yeah. Yeah, no, it really does. But it's, you know, to do those videos, I mean, just since we started doing these podcasts as a FlossTube video, just to put the audio up and a few pictures, it's like, oh, mm-hmm. oh, it just, yeah, it yeah. adds to the work. It's just a lot of work. And
when you do it twice a week, so.
Right, right.
Yeah.
It is a lot of work.
Yeah. 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 Some days. Yeah. But, you know, we enjoy doing it, and people enjoy listening, so.
It's well worth it. Yeah. You know, it's work, but it's fun work.
Yes, and you make, in the relationships that you make.
Correct.
Because, you know, the people that take, you know, there's lots of people that will read or listen or watch or whatever, and, you know, you'll never hear from them. But the ones that you hear from. I mean, I have just sat and bawled over things that people will write to me or, you know, and that I have made, you know, friendships with people all across the world. And that's why I keep doing it, because when I get disheartened or down in the dumps, and don't we all, as human beings, don't we all get disheartened and down in the dumps from time to time? And I'll save those. I have a file on my email that is special emails. And anybody that has just truly touched my heart, and that's like almost everybody that writes me, I'll save their emails. And I have hundreds of emails. And I'm not saying that to brag. I'm not saying it to brag at all. I'm just saying it that, you know, the people that take the time to write you and tell you how you've touched their hearts, or that they appreciate X, Y, and Z that you do, that is just so... for them to take the time in this world where nobody has time anymore, and we're all running out of time, it seems like nobody has enough time, to take the time to write me and tell me that, what they think, really nice words, that just means so much to me.
Yeah, and that's the cool thing about this hobby is it happens on a global basis. You hear from people everywhere. That's just so neat. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, all right, this week... We're trying something. So I've been on the midweek shows. I started keeping track of, you know, it's that old myth. If you do something for 10,000 hours, you become an expert, which of course, mm-hmm. if you slop through it for 10,000 hours, you're still sloppy. So that doesn't work, but I've been keeping track and, of little things I learn as I go along and just been writing them down. So mm-hmm. what we asked Vonna to do is, come up with some things that she's learned in her journey to 10,000 hours, little tips and tricks and that kind of thing that you've learned. And you said you had what, 10 or a dozen of them?
I have 11.
Oh, 11. Right between 10 and 12. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
I could probably come up with a lot more though. You get me talking, Gary. I could probably come up with 111.
Okay. Well, we got nothing but time, so have at it.
All right.
All right. So what's the first one on your list?
Okay, the very first thing, and this is going to be controversial. Some of mine might
Oh,
be
good. Good.
Controversial to many people. But the number one thing that has made a huge difference in my stitching is my technique where I stitch with the point of the needle down and the eye of the needle up. I never turn my needle. And
yes.
that is huge. That has been the number one thing for me that has made me have consistent tension. My threads always lay beautifully. My threads never twist. I don't have to railroad, or I don't have to use a laying tool. I don't have to do anything. As long as I do my up and down stitching technique, my threads are gorgeous.
And it does work. It works. Yes.
Yes, it does work.
It does work. Now, and
it's
I
such
think,
an odd
oh,
thing to try to do, though. It's so weird to get used to.
And, you know, I've been doing that. I can't, this is how, we talk about this one other show?
Yeah,
we did. Maybe I did.
Yeah.
But how I came up with it was just because I was lazy and didn't want to change my thread. And when I did it, and the first stitch I laid, I was like, man, look at that. That looks great. And so I thought, you know, then I on purpose tried it. And, you know, now I've been doing it for so long that when I do it, like sometimes when I do counted canvas, you know, you can't really shove a needle, you know, an eye of a needle up
right.
through the canvas
right.
with all that specialty stuff. And so when I have to retrain my brain to turn my needle when I do counted canvas.
Yeah, yeah.
Almost every time. So,
yeah.
to me, it's just like I just do it without thinking. And when people like, if I'm around somebody stitching and they see me do it, they're like, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" And then I try to explain it to them, and they'll try it and they'll go, "This doesn't work." Or, you know, I've been kind of dinged on in social media groups that, you know, it doesn't work and it splits the threads. And yes, it does do all that. It does. It will. That technique will do that if you're not careful, but you can always get yourself out of it. And so my stitching technique, that's the number one thing for me that has been, and I, like I said, that was a complete like goof moment that I that just happened, you know, and I cannot hardly stitch any other way. I can't, I have to retrain my brain to do it the right way. When I have to, in those instances where I might have to. So,
yeah, I ran across just the other day, I'd never knew these existed, a double ended needle with an eye in the mm-hmm. middle. I never mm-hmm. saw such a thing.
Yeah. I think John James makes those. And that's the number one comment that I get on cause I have a video of my stitching technique on, YouTube, and that's the number one comment that I'll get is, well, this is stupid. Why don't you use a double-ended needle? Or don't you know that there's double-ended needles? Yeah, I do know that there's double-ended needles. But the double-ended needles are, like, very long. It's almost like they took two needles and, like, stuck the eye in together. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I tried them once just after I started doing this technique. I thought, oh, well, look, there's the whole answer to my question. And I found them awkward. And I thought that it chewed up my floss, too.
Oh.
And, yeah, so I don't, you know, if other people use them, that's great. I didn't prefer it for myself.
Well, this thing I was reading, it didn't sound like there was anybody who'd used them who was still using them. And I can see how it would chew up the floss because it's sliding up and down that eye, isn't it?
Right, yeah. And it's just, yeah, it's staying right in the middle, kind of. Yeah, and it just, I didn't like how it chewed up the floss and the length of it. I don't like petite needles. I just use regular size needles. But the length of it was very awkward to me. So that was a drawback for me, too.
Hmm. Yeah, well, there was nobody supporting them. Somebody had just discovered them, and I don't recall in the string of responses there was anybody that liked them. There had been people had tried them, so I hadn't even thought about, yeah, going back and forth in that eye as you go up and down with that thread. That's just sawing
mm-hmm.
on it. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay, well, I have to say I have tried it, and I use your technique, and it does work. And
yeah, I do, too.
Yep.
Well, thank you for saying that. It's, you know, it's like any technique. You have to, you know, practice and see what works for you. But once you get going with it, it's really, I think it's faster because you're stitching two-handed. But I can do that same technique just using a hoop or a Q-snap and not stitching on a stand. And I can still do it that way. And I think it's, I just really like it. I just think that has been the most revolutionary thing in my stitching. Yeah, honestly, it has been.
All right. What's number two on that magic list there?
Number two is I always stitch with shorter lengths. I don't stitch with anything over 18 inches in length. And in my length, I can never say that word. With the length of floss.
18 inches is all?
I imagine that's all. Well, let me think. Here, I'm looking.
I guess I'm not too far off of that. I'm just kind of.
Yeah, 18 inches. That's about all I use. And because if it's a yard, it's a half a yard, basically. So, and what I do when I put it on my needle, when I thread my needle, I always like split that length in half. And then as I stitch, every couple of stitches, I move my needle down. So where it's held in the eye, the floss that's in the eye is never worn. It gets equal wear along the length of the line so that it never looks, the fiber of the thread never looks worn or fuzzy.
Now does see there, sense? There, it does. There. I like that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
And the reason I started doing that, there's always a reason, Gary, and Christine, why I do things. The reason why I did that is on one of my fair pieces in the early years, I had a comment from the judge that my threads looked fuzzy. And I thought, well, what does that mean, looks fuzzy? And I had talked to somebody in my needlework shop, and she said, well, like that at the end, you know how you, when you cross stitch, it's always going through the linen and that wears. And she goes, and it gets fuzzy over time. And I was like, oh. And so I paid attention to when I was stitching, then what I did. And I realized that that was kind of true. And that if I do it where I split, you know, so I have 18 inches, and when I put it in my needle, it's probably like 10 inches on the, where I anchor it, do the pin stitch to the linen. And then the 10 inches from the eye out on my tail. And then I was trying to count today when I stitched and I was making my list of things. Every about 4 stitches, I'll move my needle down, I've noticed. And I do it without thinking.
Yeah.
But I probably didn't do it without thinking when I first started doing that. So that's my number 2 thing. It's made a huge difference.
That's good.
That's funny because I do that too, but really it's again, born out of laziness because it just makes your working thread shorter. So you're not pulling this crazy long thread, you know what I mean? And then you just, as soon as you get close to where it's going to double up, then you move your needle.
Yeah. Right.
I never really thought about it.
Yeah. And with so over dyed threads, you know, they card those and that's a yard each. Okay, so like for instance, Classic Color Works, when they card those, I think you get like 5 yards of that. So there's 5 lengths, and each length is 1 yard, right? Well, I was asking Diane, because I was going to do this on the 25 Days of Christmas, about, because you get this question, I get this question often, how do you stitch with overdyed? What's the correct way of stitching with overdyed threads? And so I was asking her, since she now takes care of Classic Color Works, what is the way that you're supposed to do that? Since you make them, tell me how I'm supposed to use them. And she said that you just use one, you know, you pull the strands and you use that entire, you know, 36 inches of it. And at one time, and I didn't say anything to her, but I was thinking to myself, and I tried it, and I was like all thumbs. It was just too long for me. And I know it's because I'm used to working with shorter lengths. So this is what I do, is when it's carded, the overdyed floss, when it's carded, you know, so it's the yard, and they fold it in half, and then they loop it through the half part and put it on the card. Well, I cut the one end that is doubled over, so like a U-shaped, I cut that there, and then I pull out length. So I effectively create 10 lengths of strand out of the 5 that's on the card.
Yeah.
See what I'm saying?
Yep.
And so that's how I know I stitch with about 18 inches, because that's what I do with that when I work on overdyed, is that, and she said that that's not really to get consistent. Like if a thread is very variegated, to get consistent like
right blends.
Yes,
right?
Yes. As so the so it goes from dark to light to, you know, however it goes. That if you work it from one end to the other end and then rethread from one end to the other end, you're always getting consistent color variations. But that, but honestly, that I don't care about that. So I don't do it like that. So I don't do it like that. And I know that, I mean, I just like to work with shorter lengths. And funny enough, I feel like, I think that the comment that I got that on the judges was a sampler that I had used over dyed threads on that said that they were fuzzy. Now, I'm not saying over dyed threads get fuzzy. I'm just saying, I think that's the one. The piece that I got that comment on was a piece that was all over dyed threads, and I'm just more comfortable working with shorter lengths, but moving my needle down the length of the thread has really cleared that up for me. So
yeah, when you said 18 inches, that seems short to me, but then as I held my hands out here, that's about where I'm at, you know? So yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cause if I go very long, then I always feel like my arm is having to extend too far,
or right. It's not comfortable.
Yeah.
No.
Or I'm bringing my other hand in to pull it, and I just yeah. And I hate when they get knotted.
Then, yeah, and if you notice too, like when you get towards your end, that you're the one that's been the tail the whole time from the beginning. It's ragged on that end.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's why you have to end off. And so I always think, my goodness, if it's that ragged and it's just a state, what if I do it 36 inches? It's going to be like disintegrating by the time I get there. So I just always use shorter lengths, and that solved that problem then.
Yeah, and I'm with you on the variegation. There are some times when I'll manipulate the thread because I want the pattern to be consistent. But most of the time, I don't care. I just let it be random. I don't worry about it.
You know, and you hear about people saying, I don't like it to look stripy. Well, I kind of like that, especially if you're doing a reproduction sampler. You know, nothing ever, I guess, like if you have a sampler or something in the light where it fades, nothing fades in a consistent manner. It's going to be stripy. There's going to be, you know what I mean? And so right. To me, that's even makes it more antique-y looking when it looks stripey. I kind of like that look, that stripey look. So
yeah,
it's not a problem for me.
Doesn't bother me. Okay, here's a question for you. I'm doing a reproduction sampler, and I'm using Silk Mori,
mm-hmm.
Krennic,
mm-hmm.
and we'll leave that there. We'll just leave that sit right there. But it's one. I'm doing 1/2. Mm-hmm. And it seems like the thread is forever slipping out of the needle, and I don't want to knot it. You know, I don't want to knot it so it stays in the needle, but it's starting to drive me nuts. I'm forever rethreading the needle because I'll pull it through and I didn't grasp the thread quite right and it slips out. Is that you got any tricks, Vonna?
I do. As a matter of fact, Gary, on my list, it's like, let me see what it is on my list. It is number 6 on my list. Okay, I came up with this idea on my own, and I had saw. I don't know how this came about, but I do know. Thread Heaven going out of business made me very sad. And I have always used Thread Heaven, which is also on my list. But with them going out of business, that was like a real, you know, shock to my whole system.
Right.
And I have tried the Thread Magic, and it's fine. I think it's almost exactly the same as Thread Heaven, as a matter of fact. But before I figured all this out, I was going to try to just go cold turkey, right? I was going to go cold turkey, and I wasn't going to use it in Thread Heaven, and I was going to make it work. And I had, I don't know what company did this, but it was a long, long time ago. They had little rectangular square boxes with pieces of, like a length of sponge in there, and you put water on it.
Got one of those. Proud owner.
Okay. Yep. Okay. So I found out sneakiest thing. This is funny how I found this out. But what I did is I made my own homemade Vonna version, and I call it the homemade thread licker. I used it to just like wet, because it's like irritating when you have like 1 inch of floss left and your needle slips out, and then you have to bend your head, you know, underneath your, you know, I have a magnifier and light and all that stuff, and to try to get your head and your tongue underneath there to lick the end of the thread to get it back, and the needle was
irritating. Oh, I'm paying to watch that, Vonna. I am absolutely paying to watch that.
That's part of the video we don't ever see.
I'm in the car right now, Vonna. I'm headed to Indiana. I got
to
see that.
Get the videos up.
So, anyways, I thought I remember seeing that. I'm going to make myself a homemade thread licker. And so, what I did is I got like a go into Hobby Lobby, or even there's like bead boxes that have those little circular plastic cases that have a screw-on lid. You can get them in Hobby Lobby and Michael's, like in the candle lip balm making area.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so I got one of those, and I got many of those, and I got cello sponges from Walmart. Like, you know, you get three of them for like $2. And I came home and I cut out all these circles because I was making them for all my friends. My homemade thread lickers. And so I
really hope you labeled them that.
No, I didn't. But that's a really
good
idea.
Such a missed opportunity.
So anyway, I have this homemade thread licker. And I was actually doing a sampler where I had, well, okay, those alphabets that I've been doing for my kids' friends and for them, they're like Celtic ABCs, and I've been doing everybody's first initial of their name. I was using silk, and I had the same problem where I would just be going bamming right down the line, and then whoop, it slipped out. It was irritating me, so I ran it through. The whole, instead of just the end with my homemade thread licker, I did it from start to finish, and that held the thread right in my needle. I never had a problem. I could get done with the whole length, and it was just, it like gave it
just a little bit of friction. Yeah,
friction and a little body to it. And you're not getting it sopping wet. You're just, you know, running it. It's just a little damp. And so today I was stitching actually, I have an advanced copy of the Little House Christmas farmhouse that everybody's going nutso about. I'm doing a video on that to how to finish those ornaments. And so I've got to get my mind stitched to put out by the time that they're released and in shops. So I was stitching that, and it has a lot of white in there. And you know how everybody complains about laying white stitches.
Right.
And yep. I thought today I'm going to try my thread licker on my white thread.
This is going so sideways.
To see how this works. And you know what? It was fabulous. Those were the best white stitches I think with no effort. It was all because of the homemade thread licker.
There you go. I'm telling you, you need to label it.
I'm picturing the ad campaign for this.
Mm-hmm. It's all the homemade Vonna, thread licker.
Yeah, Vonna has to do the voiceover because it only works if it comes in your voice.
Right.
That's the thing.
Right.
Oh, shoot. That is funny. But it really, I'll tell you what, if you have one of those, Gary, try it. It's astounding. The difference.
Okay.
I mean, it's just, and all it is a little bit of water.
Well, I've had to go to Thread Heaven with this silk Mori. Is that how you say it? Mori? Mori? Whatever.
I don't know.
I've had to go to Thread Heaven because it was fraying and getting fuzzy on me. It was losing its luster. Mm-hmm. So I went to Thread Heaven for it. And all right, I'll try water because I do have one of those sponges.
I think that you'll find that it's great. I really do think that you'll find that it's okay. Great. I hope that the homemade thread layer works for you, Carrie, because it's just, I think you really will find it's just like awesome.
Well, if mine doesn't work, I may have to call and get like the name brand homemade thread liquor. Yeah.
I would put one right in the mail to you.
Yeah, because you know, because there often is a difference between name brand and generic, and I have generic.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So I may have to have.
It's a homemade thread liquor.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll give that a try then. All right.
I'm so glad we jumped to number six.
Well, and let me tell you, there's another part of number six with the homemade thread liquor. It's just going to blow your mind, Christine. Because have you ever, when you frog, you know how when you have to frog areas and you're stitching on linen, especially linen that's maybe a little bit looser weave, I've even seen it happen on tighter weave linen, you have holes and they don't go back to normal holes, right?
Right.
The normal weave of the linen. You just run your homemade frog liquor, you know, it doesn't have to be the frog thread liquor, the homemade frog thread liquor mixer.
Are we specializing now?
If you just run the end of that sponge and just to get a little damp, bingo bango, the holes go right back to normal. That's just another little tip. You will not see that you frogged that. And so, that was just a fire moment, discovering fire moment for me.
But you know what though? So okay, let's be serious for a moment.
Oh no, no, no.
It makes sense, right? Because what do you do when you're blocking a piece? You dampen it, right? Mm-hmm. And it allows the fibers to relax back into the state that they want to be in. So that's exactly what you're doing, is you're doing like a microscopic blocking with every thread that goes through is basically blocking that little mini area.
Right.
So it makes a lot of sense.
It does. And it does make a lot of sense. You're like plumping those fibers back to their normal state. Basically what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that. I was doing that at a retreat this fall. I gifted everybody the homemade thread liquor after the retreat.
Oh, so you're like Oprah now.
She's like the evangelist.
Yeah, she's the Oprah. She's the Oprah of needlework. Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
That's right.
And when I gave them, the funny thing was, is that I just go, oh, you know, I wasn't throwing the retreat. I was just a participant at the retreat. And I said, oh, I have surprises for everybody. And I walked around with my bag of thread liquors. I said, what color would you want? Because my cello sponges came in green, yellow, or purple. And I said, you know, I told them those were the colors I had. And when I gave them to them, they were like, you know, their faces, I mean, really, there should have been a candid camera there, because their face was like, what is this? And I would say, well, it is the homemade thread liquor. That's what it is. And so I would have to explain to them what it was. And I think that I had a lot of people were like, wow, this works really nice. You know what I mean? The ones that actually did try it. Some were like, you know, what is this woman? She is nuts. But, you know, but the ones that actually did try it said, you know, that really does work. You know, another thing it works for is like if you bobbinate your DMC or your anchor floss, you know, if they've been on there for years and years and years, like some of my colors are,
they
come off key. I tell you, it's just like miracle. You just run them against the thread liquor and back to normal, straight as can be.
It's pretty much a cure-all is what you're saying.
It really honestly is. It is the penicillin of needlework.
Now we have the slogan. See, homemade thread liquor, the penicillin of needlework.
There you go.
See, it's all coming together right now. Yep.
Oh, shoot.
Let's see. Now, going through airport security with a bag of homemade thread liquor. No, never mind.
And everybody thought the knitting needles were bad.
Yeah.
That's not the problem.
All right. That's number six. Okay, we're done.
Yeah.
That's it.
Show over.
Yep. Okay, well, I don't even remember where we left off, two or three.
We were
up to three.
We're up to three now.
Okay.
Pin stitch. The diagonal pin stitch.
Oh, Vonna.
What a rebel.
Vonna.
Yeah.
Oh, I am singing your praises constantly about the diagonal.
We are both fans.
Oh.
The diagonal pin stitch. That is.
That's
that,
it.
Yeah, it's incredible. And it's been the last, you know, and like I said, I think I said this on one, the last time I was on, I thought I was really something and invented fire with that. And then realized, you know, somebody else came up with that too. But I tell you what, that has been revolutionary. I don't even do a loop start anymore. I always do the pin head stitch start because that just saves so much. I mean, it just makes the backs. I don't know. I just really like it. I just use that. I use it constantly. Even if I could do a loop start, I just use the pin head stitch. So
I do it all the time, and I'm working on this reproduction sampler, and it's so nice. Each motif, I just start wherever I want, you know, wherever it is, I just start. No away stitch, no dangling, nothing. Just do the diagonal pin stitch and go. And the back is clean, and I don't have carryovers, and big fan. Big fan.
That's huge. That was a huge thing. Then that was just really this last 18 months that I've started doing that, and I can do it now without even thinking. I can do it now without even turning my work over to look to see if I have enough. You know, it's just that was revolutionary to me. The diagonal pin stitch was revolutionary.
Now I will say, as many of them as I've done, I cannot do it. Because you said that oftentimes you don't even have a tail worth cutting off.
Yeah.
How do you do that? Because I always have like a half an inch.
So I can do it, and there will just be, whenever I was doing it today, and my husband was watching me, and he goes, "That's like a miracle." And I go, "I know, right?" When I come up through, so I do the diagonal, and I come up through the middle, and I always go down to the, I think it's the left. I've done it both ways, either go up to the right top corner or the lower left. And I feel with my finger about how long that is underneath it. And I bet you I can do an eighth of an inch. I bet you that's all I have.
Wow.
And I'll go down to the corner and then catch it and go up to the up, you know, the opposite diagonal corner and go back down through the middle. And there's oftentimes, and what I do before I go down, because it'll slip easy, is I hold it with my fingernail. So I hold the, when I come up, I'm holding it underneath. And then when I go back down and my hand underneath my work catches the needle, I'll hold that thread with my other hand as it goes down. And that keeps it from slipping out. And then it's always good every time. So
yeah, I hold it, but I'm not holding it that close. I got to practice more. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's just a practice thing. And once you do it long enough, you don't even think about it. Because I know I don't think about it at all.
Yep. Well, it's I'll tell you, that is, it's really made, because that's the one thing about stitching that I find annoying is starting and ending threads. Just to me, a constant pain in the butt. And this thing has just eliminated half of it right there. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. That is a great deal. That has really been revolutionary for me too. Yep. So I agree.
Okay. Number four.
Snag Nabbit.
Okay.
I use that all the time.
All right. All right. Now I got to learn more about this, because I looked for one at Joann's and they didn't have one.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you can get them online. My Joann's doesn't carry them in the store. I buy it online at Joann's.
Okay.
Is where I get it. And I think Hobby Lobby also has their brand of sewing notions is Sewology, and I've heard other people say that they've found a Sewology Snag Nabbit. So I guess they might have them, but I've only gotten the ones from Joann's, and that has been, I've used that for probably 3 years. And today, you know, again, since you told me to come up with things that I, you know, techniques and tips, I was thinking really hard about it as I was stitching today. And I grabbed the Snag Nabbit a lot.
Oh, really?
A lot. And I didn't realize I used it that much, but I do use it a lot. And it just is very helpful for little fuzzies that come up. You just, you know, get it right back down nice. If you're like, you know, sometimes how legs of X's don't look quite right, or one of the the threads might be up a little bit more. And I just snag-nabbed all of that, and it just looks perfect. Something that you think, oh, I'm going to have to take that out because it doesn't look right, snag-nabbed it. I tell you what, that'll take care of it.
Okay, I got to get one then. Because, see, yeah. I've got this on this sampler I'm working on. There's this one roll. It's like 40 count, and it's you know, it's one thread, one over two, and there's just this single roll of X's that goes all across, and they're all an off white. And where I ended one thread and started another, you can tell. I mean, I can tell under the magnifier, which is not the way I should be telling. But anyway, it's not as smooth as all the others. And I tore it out three times last night. And I don't know, just something about that one spot. It won't go back. It won't go the way it should be. And so I'm wondering if the snag nabbit.
And you know, and that's, Gary, that's when I started. Okay, so I'm 47, right? My eyes have been going downhill close up now for like the last 36 months probably. And so I got my first magnifier, lit magnifier, 12 months ago. And I told my husband just the other day, you know, it is amazing how much better you can see your stitches. And then you think, boy, those judges, they were right. I did suck. Because, you know, I mean, those magnifiers really does. I mean, you can really see everything.
Yeah.
And I think that that's why I've started using the snag-nabbit so much, because I see something as I'm going. You know, I might be stitching a different area, but something underneath the magnifier catches my eye, and I'll look over there and I'll think, oh, that's not right. And I'll get my snag-nabbit and snag-nabbit it down. And it really does make a huge difference. And I noticed it more because I use a magnifier. And so I don't know if that's going to be good this upcoming fair or bad, but I feel like that has helped me. I think it's helped me with my stitching become more consistent, or at least recognize things that I need to go back there and look at this area. So anyway, I think that if you would get one, Gary, you would tell a big difference with that row, and it would make you more pleased. You know what I mean? If you would just snag-nab at the area that you think looks bad.
Well, I'll have to give that a try. And then paying job keeps getting in the way, and I've been going to look up on your site the seam ripping tool that you have that has the rubber end. Where do you get that? Tell about that.
Okay.
Cause I just have the regular cheap one.
Yeah. I just usually had the regular cheap one too. And about, two or three years ago, I was looking in the Sewing Notions area, and I saw that, and I thought, well, that would be awful nice because it has that rubber nubbin on the other end. And I thought that'd be nice. You can get all the wispies and all that stuff up, because I used to have like an eyelash brush that I would use to get the wispies up. But this, it's just called a seam rippet, I think is what it's called, or seam fixer. Maybe it's a seam fixer. And it is at Joann's again, and they're usually always purple, and they have the white rubber eraser thing on the top. And it's at Joann's. You can get it online, and I have about six of them scattered all over my house, and I use that a lot. So Keith always finds them, and he always says, why do we have all of these? And I go, because you know, you never know when you're going to need it.
That's right. I need to have things happen.
Hey, Keith. It's one hobby.
That's right.
Yeah. Just deal with it. Just deal with it.
One hobby.
Yeah. Just deal with it. Yeah. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Keep that in perspective. Okay. I got to find one of those.
I think, honestly, 123 Stitch sells them too. I don't know if like there's somebody that like follows me on one and like stocks everything. But I have noticed that they have it on their website too, I think.
Okay.
So if you can't find it at Joann's, but I know Joann's carries it online too. Okay. So
I try to support those brick and mortar stores, and you know, I keep running into brick walls with that. It's frustrating.
Yeah, I do. I do too. That's very important to me to do that too. And but there's times where you just, you know, you can't do it every time, but I certainly do try to, because I appreciate being able to go and feel the linen and see the colors, mm-hmm. and, you know all that good stuff. And my local needlework shop sure does know me good, because I'm there all the time. So anyway.
All right. Number five. We got number five. We're not going to get them all in. So that means you have to come back.
No, we're not.
That's okay.
Let's see. Let me see a really good one. Okay. Well, we talked about my two-handed stitching. I can stitch one-handed, you know, holding the hoop, but as far as my posture and, my muscle, you know, repetitive motion syndrome, I have to stitch with a lap stand or a floor stand. So, that was revolutionary to me, because I would not be stitching if I would have followed my doctor's advice 12 years ago when I went in with rotator cuff and tennis elbow problems. And it was from, you know, holding my hoop and stitching constantly. And he said, well, the only thing you can do is just rest it. And basically you need to quit stitching. And I was like, I'm not going to do that. No way. And so I started looking into buying a floor stand, and I did. And right now I'm the owner of one floor stand and three lap stands, and they're all reviewed on my blog, except one. I have a roller frame lap stand that the owner gifted to me for supporting his business, his roller frame business. And he gifted me one last Christmas, and I use it a lot too, but I use all of mine, all four of them. I use them equally, and I couldn't live without any one of them, which sounds crazy, but it's truth. That's the truth. I use all of them. And, so I would say, if anybody's having problems with their arms or holding the hoop, or look into getting a stand of some sort, because it will help you.
Yeah. I learned that publishing business, sitting at computers all day long, and it was a long time ago now, but I had an editor who was on my staff that started having severe carpal tunnel problems. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And to the point where, I mean, it was really hurting productivity for all the staff, because she just couldn't work. And mm-hmm. And so I had to call in, and the company, of course, no, that equipment's expensive. You know, the right ergonomic chairs and stuff is expensive. And finally, I called in someone who was an ergonomic specialist, and they looked at Nancy was her name. They looked at her and her setup, and it was just all wrong. And she was basically putting all of her weight on her wrist and then using her mouse with that. And she wasn't supported at her back or anything. And you read about, a lot of stitchers having shoulder problems and wrist problems and carpal tunnel, mm-hmm. and wearing supports and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I know it's just, if they just had a proper chair and like you said, a stand and a magnifier. Right, so they
change angles of things
and support your body. Yeah. Right. That a lot of that would just go away.
Yeah. I, like I said, the doctor told me to stop doing whatever I was doing to harm my arm. And he goes, what do you do? Do you play tennis? And I said, no. And I go, but I cross stitch. And he goes, cross stitch? You know, you must be doing it a lot. And I go, well, I do it every day. And my arm was so inflamed that, I mean, it would just fall asleep and feel like I was on fire.
Whoa.
And, so yeah, it was bad. I mean, it was very bad, and it would ache through the day. And so I got a floor stand first, and that saved me. I mean, that was huge to learn how to stitch two-handed, so both sides of my body are getting equal care. It's not focused on one side. And so that's why I like a lap stand, is so that I can stitch two-handed, so both sides get equal. And then, I mean, think about when you keep your arm crooked all the time by holding a hoop or whatever, that's not any good either. That's going to give you muscle problems on your arm too. So lap stands or floor stands, that's the way to go, in my opinion. That has been revolutionary for me. So as much as I stitch, and I stitch a lot, so
yeah,
it was a good thing.
Yeah, and I think it would do everyone some good to take a look at their sitting, their situation. Are you properly supported?
Yeah.
Because I know for me, I can sit for a long time. I have a desk chair with a lumbar support pillow in the back and a stand. And if I make myself, I sit up straight, and I can just go, you know, I just don't get tired at all. My arms are, the armrests on the chair, one is higher than the other. So the one that's working under the canvas is on a lower armrest, but my forearms are both on armrests, so that my hands are free to move without having to bear any weight or hold anything up. And I can sit for hours. It doesn't bother me a lick. You know?
Yeah, that's the way I am too. And I put I bought one of those. It was on Amazon. I was having problems with my legs, and I bought like a little, just it's called a foot pillow, and it's like a hard foam pillow, and it just fits right up next to my chair. I set upright when I stitch. I don't like to lazy boy it back or anything like that. But buying this $20 pillow from Amazon has been huge for me. I so huge that I have one down on my finishing cave, and I put my feet on it when I finish. And I have one in my living room area where I stitch, and then one in my bedroom where I stitch. So I bought three of them after I bought the original one, just to put my feet on it. And, you know, it's cushy, and it's probably like 6 or 8 inches thick, so your feet are up a little bit. And it also helps when I'm using my lap stand, that it makes my knee, my legs or my knees, like more balanced or something, so that stands hold. Yeah, they're like nicer when I have my feet on that little pillow. So that was, you know, I guess another tip. I didn't have it written down.
Well,
but my little foot pillow.
That was 6.5.
Yeah, 6.5. Now, see, you just gave me an idea, though, because at my we work at home here, and at my work desk, I have it's just a platform that swivels on an angle. It's a footrest. So if you're typing for a long time, I always have my feet on that. And it does help to get your feet up a little bit, but I never thought of putting it in my stitching area. I think I'll be trying that.
Yeah, that makes a huge difference, Gary. Try it. Because I looked at those foot platforms too, and I thought, I don't want something hard, especially at night when I stitch them, you know, because my husband and I have a television in our bedroom, and that's where we go retire to after, you know, everything's done in the evening, and we watch television there. And I thought, I don't want to set on, you know, I'm usually bathed by that time, and I'm in my nightgown or whatever, and I don't want to put my bare feet on something hard. And so I saw this on Amazon and just tried it, and it made a big difference. But if that footrest that you're talking about, it'll make a huge difference if you try it when you're stitching. I really do think so. It made a huge difference for me.
Yeah, anyway, I'm gonna try it. Yeah, I'm gonna give that a try. You know how you don't think to transfer one thing from one place to another, but it's the same function. So I'll have to give that a try. All right, 6.5. Now on to 7.
I just found this Christmas and are well in December, and they're called Fiskars thread snips. And they're like those old kind of like shears that they would use to like trim horses' hooves or something. They're like it looks like almost like a safety pin. And they're two shears, and the blades, when you close them, the blades go like cross, you know, so it clicks and cross. But they're called Fiskars thread snips. And that lets you get the thread tails right down next to the linen. I mean, they are really nice. I really like them. And I just bought one in December, and I've been using it, and they're lightweight. And, you know, it's just, you just pick them up and snip. You don't have to, you know, I mean, it's, you don't have to put your fingers through any holes or anything. It's just pick them up, snip. And I like them. Just a little thread.
It's handy.
It's just handy. Yeah. Just, it's just, they're nice.
Fiskars thread snips. Okay, and that reminds me, Fiskars or Fiskars, however you say that, it's all your fault, Vanna. I bought a sewing machine. Okay. Mm-hmm. And okay, because I wanted to edge. I wanted to be able to determine when I got my canvases and my ground cloths edged. That was the main reason. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So then that led to me studying your site and watching your videos. So now I have the cutting board and the rotary cutter, and the see-through measuring meters.
Quarter ruler. Yeah.
Yeah. That thing. So it became a whole infrastructure thing. So I bought the sewing machine and then was off to Joann's. You know, first, what I learned with Joann's, the first time I went in there, some lady was helping, just a customer. I asked for help. So I knew nothing. She says, well, do you have coupons? And I said, what do I know? No. And she says, she looked at me like I was an idiot. Well, turns out I was.
Yeah, don't buy anything.
Holy smokes. They give stuff away.
Yeah.
So now I have the app on my phone to get the coupons and, mm-hmm. and the whole thing. But yeah, it's all your fault. Cause now I have this whole sewing infrastructure.
You're getting a bat cave, Gary, just like me.
That's right. That's right.
Well, and I'm determined to learn how to do just some basic finishing. And, so my first project was you put up how to make a cover for your magnifier.
Oh yeah, that was on the 25 days.
Yes, and so that was the first thing I made. Mm-hmm. I made one, and I just used it like you said, and just used the felt the size that I bought it. Well, that was too small mm-hmm. for my magnifier.
And
So then I took two pieces and taught myself how to sew them together, mm-hmm. and on each side. And then Marga had some upholstery cloth that she recovered some chairs. So I used that for the outside, and uh-huh. by golly, I followed your instructions, and I have just a real nice felt lined cover. It worked out great. And
isn't that it? Now that was really nice. And let me tell you that it's not only is it really nice, I'm certain that it's a safety feature too.
Oh yeah,
I burned up my couch because I didn't have mine covered. So,
well, I always covered mine. I had a cloth bag that I put over it, but it was way too big, and it was just a thing. So this is just nice, neat, fits perfectly, looks good, and yeah. So yay you, but
well, thanks.
But you initiated several eye rolls out of Marga as I was acquiring the infrastructure. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Tell her I'm sorry. But yeah. When stuff comes flying out of your bat cave, Gary, you're gonna be so happy.
when I made those two magnifier covers, you have no idea how hard I worked to push those corners out to make them pointy. Because
I'm well known about that.
I didn't want that Vanna look.
You didn't want me to get nervous.
No. In your video, you give that evil eye, stink eye look. It's like, I don't want that. I'm poking these corners out. Yeah.
Oh, shoot, that's funny.
Yeah. So I have the bamboo corner poker outer, I think is how you call it.
Yeah, that's what I call
there
it.
There you go.
Kind of like the thread licker. Yeah. you have the corner poker outer, yep. Thread licker,
yep.
Thingamajig.
Yeah. Well, I bought the first, I have two corner poker outers. One's plastic.
Yeah. And those are dangerous.
Yeah. I didn't like it. But I couldn't find the bamboo. And then I ended up in the quilting section, and that's where the bamboo one was.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't know why, okay. But that's where it was. So I got it from there.
You mean you couldn't just ask for the corner poker outer and somebody didn't know where that was?
I was pretty confident they wouldn't know.
I've actually found out what the real term of it is. I just found out recently, though. It's called a point turner. I didn't realize that that's what it was called.
Okay.
I called it the poker outer.
Okay. I like it. I like yours. Corner poker outer. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's what it does, right? And when you say that, everyone knows exactly what you're talking about.
That's right. They do.
Right? They're like, oh.
Technical term. Yes. Mm-hmm. All right. I think that's where we're going to end it right there on the corner poker outer thing. Yeah. And the homemade thread licker. And oh. There's a whole line of Vaughn accessories coming up. I can just smell it.
Yeah, you really could. You could do a whole right.
You know, like, bunch of them. Yeah, I could have my own, you know, aisle in Joann's.
Yes.
With the frog lick, you know, the thread licker and the corner poker outer. I could come up with a lot more stuff, let me tell you.
Your product names are so long that it's going to take an aisle just to hold the names.
True, but you can just see the packaging now, yes. Though. It's going to be really endearing and special, yep. Like these 1950s style. I can see it in my head already.
Yes.
I know. Yeah. I mean, that would be great.
Get an agent.
I think I ought to work towards that.
All right, that's it. Thanks, Vaughn. Always a pleasure.
Well, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure for me, too. I have so much fun.
All right, we'll be back Wednesday with more of this stuff. Thanks for listening.